This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski on 104.5 The Zone.
Second hour is here. PK, an hour closer to the Florida vacation coming up for he and his family this weekend and all next week. Chad is back next week. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Glad you're with us. Clay Travis joins us in about 15 minutes. Austin Price of VolQuest.com today at 12:20. And at 1 o'clock, John McClain is on the show. A bit of some Vols news. Former Lady Vol Kara Lawson, according to Jimmy Himes, has emerged as the leading candidate for the Duke women's basketball head job. For the head coach position. So interested to see how that plays out throughout the day over the weekend. That would be quite the gig, joining Coach K at Duke for the men's and women's basketball programs there. We're discussing a lot of different headlines today. The Big Ten announcing they're going to conference only, the ACC following suit. And beyond that, we still don't know about the Big 12 or the SEC. It's been reported that the Pac-12 we'll join in what the Big Ten is doing. The SEC will meet in person in Birmingham, all ADs, on Monday. So we'll get Clay's take on this coming up. And what should be a big week of news next week for college sports, as teams are already back on campus working out, and in some cases they've paused fall workouts because of COVID spread. Paul, you sent me and Reed a tweet about the English Premier League and how they've been handling testing, and they've had a low number of positive tests based on how long they've been playing.
I have not done a lot of reading about how Europe has done what it's done in terms of getting where it's gotten in terms of the pandemic, but Ben Baby, who I'm not sure, he covers the Cincinnati Bengals for ESPN, which shows you how far removed I am from my group of former colleagues, or how few of them are left. Says between FC Dallas and Nashville SC, he says FC alone, there have been at least 19 positive COVID tests. The English Premier League has reported 19 positive tests across the entire league through 11 rounds of testing that started on May 17th. And the EPL has played, I think, at least 5 games a team now, traveling throughout England for games in empty stadiums. They've also not done a good job of social distancing, at least during those games, with a lot of fist bumps and goal celebrations that they've not been able to stop themselves from, mini dog piles and jumping on each other and hugging and the like.
So like the question is, how do they keep the guys who have tested positive from COVID-19 from spreading it in their team, right? Because that's what's happened with Nashville SC and with Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, exceptionally fast removal. But yeah, I don't know how none of it has turned in, how any of it hasn't turned into an outbreak, on a team. And I've watched my team, Chelsea, 4 out of their 5 games, I think it is. And there hasn't been a lot of talk during those games about, them or their opponent having any significant losses, to it. Or any league talk. So I'm sure the NFL and all of our major pro sports has been looking very closely at what they've been doing. We talked about the German Bundesliga at the beginning because they were back first. I haven't heard anything huge out of there either. But they're pulling it off over there, however they're doing it. Meanwhile, we can't get 2 soccer teams from Dallas and Nashville to Orlando. 2 of however many had monstrous outbreaks, and we're holding our breath, I think, for NHL for NBA and certainly for NFL, which is a different sport, granted. And, you know, soccer's based on getting your spacing and not yeah. being not being close. So the game itself lends itself to spacing. But they're riding buses and planes to get to games and doing a good job of it. Now, I think societally, they've also done a good job of it, and they've gotten past the worst of it there somehow in a way that the U.S. has not yet.
It has not, and then on top of it, trying to return to pro sports. You know, there's the yin and the yang there to me. It's there is some there are medical experts who are saying that the sport should return. There are pediatricians that are saying that schools should be open, you know, and on the other side of things, we're seeing the numbers continue to rise.
Complicated and not the content that we would have expected or the venue we would have expected to be broadcasting from. You know, it is people don't like the new normal thing. And I don't new normal maybe isn't the right way to put it, but we're living in a whole new world right now.
Well, we have to learn to live with it. I think that that's the key. And for those that are saying, oh, you just play the sport, why do you go in? Why spending so much time on the preparation for it? The goal is to keep it to where it doesn't just overtake your entire league, to where you have an entire team that has to sit out for 14 days and then get back to practicing, right?
Or like, the league shutting down. Remember or what that. It felt like when we were at Bridgestone Arena and the announcement came out that the SEC basketball tournament was done. And that was the night after or two nights after the NBA pulled the plug during a night of games, after Rudy Gobert, bless his soul, touched everybody's tape recorder when at a time where we thought surfaces were a much bigger deal, and he tested positive, or the announcement of his positive test came out a little earlier. The Ivy League had just
declared
the tournament. March Madness was done away with a few days later. I mean, things were falling like dominoes, and everything in a matter of days was gone. We don't want that again. You know, we're very excited about restart possibilities, but over that is a cloud of potential that if it's not done correctly, the lights are going to go on, like in my house, but they're not going to stay on like they stay on at my house. And gradually, somebody's going to have to go around and turn them off like I do in my house. And we're going to end up in the same damn place.
Well, the difference now is, unlike that day where we sat, man, that feels like a year ago when we were sitting at Bridgestone Arena in March, where the positive test of Rudy Gobert shut down all these tournaments. One positive because we didn't know anything about it and leagues didn't know how to handle it. Now leagues feel like they have a grasp on how to handle it if they can create a scenario like in the NBA's case, a bubble. Or MLS's case, the same thing. Or from the NFL's perspective, testing now with the saliva test and everything else that they're going to try to do to curtail COVID-19 from sweeping through an entire locker room. Like we're now to the point where they feel like they can adjust on and plan ahead for it instead of trying to react, right? Trying to be more proactive with it and planning ahead for it. We've transitioned from everything shut down to now, okay, how do we play the sport despite living with COVID-19? And then there are so many challenges within that question.
That's the hope is.
But yet people have the confidence that they're going to do it, right? Like those leagues feel confident enough to put the money and resources behind returning to play 5-6 months after we sat at Bridgestone Arena. And they couldn't play.
And all that we've seen so far is MLS try. How many teams are in MLS? I'm not sure, but two of them couldn't pull it off, and it was pretty simple what they were trying to do. And I don't know if we consider that a good hit rate or a bad hit rate, but two of them couldn't pull it off.
Simple in perspective. I see what you're saying, but
two of them couldn't pull it off. To the degree that they couldn't participate. If two NFL teams can't pull it off, What happens if two NBA teams that are going to Orlando can't pull it off? What happens if two NHL teams that are in the tournament field can't pull it off? What happens? You know, I think in the MLS, where the interest isn't that high and where they could adjust the bracket, that's one thing. And one of them is an expansion team that we've only seen play twice, and there's not a devoted following. If the NHL goes and a team with a long history has to back out and the tournament has to be adjusted in some way, shape, or form, if the NBA goes and the Lakers can't go forward, I mean, that's a massive deal. And what happens from there? I don't know.
Clay Travis is about to join us. We'll discuss from the college perspective the AD's meeting for the SEC taking place this coming Monday in Birmingham. The discussion and the decision that Clay thinks will be made there. Will they sit out a year if they can't play in the fall? Are they playing in the spring? We'll start there with Clay next on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Glad you're with us. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue alongside Paul Kuharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton. Chad Withrow returns next week. Every Friday during the 11 a.m. hour, we say hello to Clay Travis, presented by Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert. Clay joining us each Friday at this time. Clay, good morning, man.
Hey, appreciate y'all having me. What's going on?
Just looking at the sports world right now, the landscape of some conferences going conference only. I know the ADs from the SEC are scheduled to meet in person on Monday in Birmingham. They'll discuss the schedule. And you say it's either play in the fall or sit out the year. The SEC's not going to be playing a season in the spring. Why not?
I don't think anybody's going to play a season in the spring. I don't think it's just the SEC. I think if you are a college football fan and you want the sport to play, they have to play in the fall. But there are three big reasons why they're not going to play in the spring, and I'll lay those out quickly for you. One is, if you're concerned about the virus, it's cold and flu season in the spring. We're not talking about the spring meaning, you know, April, May, and June. We're talking about the spring meaning January, February, and March. So whatever you're concerned about in September is probably going to be more substantial by the time you get to after the first of the year. The second one is, which is pretty substantial too, all the best players won't play. Whether you're talking about Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, everybody who believes they have a chance to play in the NBA will go straight into combine training and get ready for the NFL combine and the NFL draft, which will be taking place during the college football season. And the third one is, physically, it doesn't make sense. I mean, you're talking about then freshmen, sophomores, and the juniors who aren't good enough to potentially consider leaving early for the NFL all playing two football seasons in the space of about 6 months, which is way too much burden to put onto their body. So if you are a college football fan, which certainly I am, and you want to see college football this season, which certainly I do, it's either the fall or bust.
How do you measure out things in a season where, say, if the SEC is playing its regular schedule, one team gets in a game with the Pac-12, another team doesn't get in a game with the Big Ten or the ACC because they're only playing in conference. So how do we weight one team's game that it played, win or lose, against another team's off week that wasn't its own doing as we measure out these teams against each other?
It's an impossible question to answer. And I think that's the problem. If you go to conference only games, there's no measuring stick. I guess you can look at the dominance that you have within the conference itself solely, but that doesn't give you a good read on how the conference might stand up in general. And remember, the big challenge that we've got here is we've got five major conferences and only four spots in the playoff this year. So a part of me wonders whether, and look, college football is often dysfunctional, so I don't know if this is possible, but would it be possible for them to expand the playoff, given that I do think the odds of there being a bowl season are very slim. And that's other than the playoff, right? I don't think it's very likely that if they play in the fall and then they play their final games around Thanksgiving, that they would then send the players home for Thanksgiving. They would then send them home for Christmas, and then they come back to get ready for playing a bowl game, which is effectively an exhibition, after being off campus for weeks at a time. I think the only games that will be played in the postseason of college football would be the playoff. But the point you're hitting on is one that is a large issue every year. You have four playoff spots in five major conferences, not counting Notre Dame, who's supposed to be pretty good this year. But also, they're not then playing against each other. So trying to self-assess who the best teams are would be nearly impossible.
So the expanded playoff would fix that. The one thing I would think couldn't happen in an expanded playoff, though, is use of NFL stadiums while NFL season was going on, if it continues to go on, because the NFL wouldn't want other people using its locker rooms, equipment in the building, and all of that. So could you see a playoff scenario where you used college stadiums, either giving somebody home field advantage or going to neutral site college stadiums, considering we're thinking that there wouldn't be many fans here, so there wouldn't be much of a home field advantage?
That's a really interesting point that I hadn't even thought about. Well, I think if you expanded the college football playoff to eight, the plan all along with eight teams playing has been the home team would get to play, you know, the higher seeded team would get to play at home. And the idea was, you know, they'll have a home field advantage. Maybe the home field advantage would just be that they get to stay at home as opposed to having to travel. But the semifinal games, and I'm not even sure where they're being played this year, and the title game are typically played in an NFL venue. Now, there's a couple of exceptions. The Rose Bowl is not an NFL venue, and the Rose Bowl, maybe somebody can look it up right now. I'm not in front of the computer where the games were scheduled to be played this year. I feel like the title game is in an NFL venue, and I also feel like typically at least one of the two locations where they would play the semifinals are typically NFL venues. So that is an interesting and intriguing question. I also think the other part of this is, when would they play those games? I tend to think that they would make it sooner rather than later, because one of the challenges of college football now is to play the conference title game, and then you sit around for 2 or 3 weeks at least until you play the playoff game. I tend to think they would try to get it all done before Christmas. That is my expectation. Which would potentially even put more of a conflict on using some of those venues.
So it's going to be, it will be the, let's see,
Rose Bowl, one semifinal, championship.
And the Sugar Bowl. Hard Rock Stadium is going to host in Miami the national championship this year.
Three-year NFL stadium, that would be an intriguing decision they would have to make. I mean, they get the benefit of the Rose Bowl, which isn't. I kind of wonder whether it's possible then that they would just say, hey, we're going to play all of the games at the Rose Bowl, which I would think would make the Rose Bowl happy, although without crowds present, I don't really know that it matters that much where those games would be played. But you could also potentially continue using on-campus venues and just say, hey, this is a special year. Whoever continues to win, we're going to give home field advantage to the higher seeded team.
Let's go back to the conference only decision by the Big Ten, because if every conference decides to do this based on logistics, to me, there are easier logistics in some of these non-conference matchups. Same day bus rides can take place in a lot of these early season games or annual opponents like Kentucky and Louisville, for instance. It's not impossible to pull off a non-conference schedule logistically for many teams within the conferences that are contemplating playing conference only this year.
I don't understand the Big Ten's logic here. Either it's safe enough to play games or it's not safe enough to play games. I don't understand why it would be safer to play games against your opponents than it would be against teams in your conference than it would be teams out of your conference. And to build on your point, let's just think about, for instance, the SEC versus the ACC. Every year at the end of the season, we have Florida, Florida State, Clemson, South Carolina, Georgia, Georgia Tech, and Louisville against Kentucky. For people who live in those states, those are massive intrastate rivalries. And as a result, that should be a game that's as easy to have happen as possible, right? Like, inside of the state, the virus was theoretically spreading similarly, whether you're in Louisville or Lexington, right? Like, it's not like you're talking about traveling around the country. But the larger context here, and by the way, those can all be bus trips as opposed to needing to get on an airplane or anything like that. The larger context here is some of these conference games are massive trips. Like, I looked at the Big Ten schedule, and they're fine with Nebraska traveling all the way to Rutgers to play a game, but they're not fine with, for instance, Iowa and Iowa State playing against each other in the state of Iowa. There does not appear to be, to me, very much logic behind the decisions that are being made there from a non-conference perspective. Now, I'm not necessarily opposed to the idea of, you know, conference games going on, but some of these conferences are massive, right? Like, the SEC is fairly geographically contained. I think probably the biggest distance and trip would be, say, Missouri going to Florida. I would think that would be the largest mileage that you would have, and I would think a team like Baylor or Texas Tech traveling to Kansas State would be the biggest in the Big 12. But you've got a situation where you could have Miami flying all the way to Boston College. Now, I don't know what Miami's schedule is this year. I'm not sure if Boston College is on the schedule or not. You could have Florida State traveling all the way to Boston. And so some of these don't make very much sense to me. You know, and like I just mentioned, you got Rutgers going all the way to Nebraska, or Nebraska going all the way to Rutgers. I mean, that's traveling halfway across the country. Moreover, do we know that the length of the time that you spend in an airplane is really dispositive in terms of danger? And the reason why I bring that up is, you know, the Big Ten has taken away the game between Ohio State and Oregon and the game between Washington and Michigan. I've traveled a lot for college football games. I've even traveled with teams for college football games. And to me, what kind of stands out is they're very similar, right? Like, you travel to an airport, you land, there's a bus waiting there for you, and it takes you to a hotel. It's not as if you are feeling like, oh my God, this is such a different experience. When you get into the stadium, the crowd there, it can feel different. But, you know, I'm using Tennessee as an example. It didn't feel that much different when Tennessee traveled to South Carolina as opposed to when Tennessee traveled to Georgia, right? In the season that I wrote about with the University of Tennessee in my On Rocky Top book, where I traveled with the team, you're staying in basically the same kind of hotel in both places. And football is unique because you're not gone very long, right? You're only spending typically Friday night in a location. And you might only have to travel for 4 or 5 weeks in the entire year. So I don't think there being very much logic to the Big Ten decision, honestly.
Clay Travis with us, presented by thehomeloanexpert.com. Clay, what will happen to Notre Dame? What would be your best case scenario for what the Irish should be planning to do?
Well, it's a great question, because if I'm Notre Dame, I'm arguing, hey, we shouldn't count as a non-conference opponent, because I guess if you're trying to make an argument for why non-conference opponents shouldn't be played, it would be, well, the smaller conferences don't have the same medical treatment available for their players, and their activities are not as aggressive as they might be in conference. Before I examine the Notre Dame, let me just say, that would be, by the way, a big issue to me. Because why should, because my son happens to play in the MAC or happens to play in Conference USA or whatever conference, why should those conferences not be able to have the same medical treatment and availability that the SEC or the Big Ten do? That seems to me to be unequal treatment when it comes to health, which would trouble me immensely, right? Because I have never heard anybody say, well, you know, if you tear your ACL at UAB as opposed to Alabama, you have a lot better doctors at Alabama than you do at UAB. I would think that everybody's going to the same high caliber of doctors, and where you get injured shouldn't impact the overall quality of your health if you play in college football. But if I'm Notre Dame, if that seems to be the rationale under which the Big Ten is moving, and again, I don't think it's a very good rationale, but if I'm Notre Dame, I'm saying, look, we're a major college football program. Our program is being run under the same standards as the rest of the major programs in college football. So we should be able to play Stanford and USC and the six teams or five teams or whatever it is from the ACC that we're playing. Because otherwise, Notre Dame's entire schedule falls apart. If only conference games can take place, then they're in trouble. Now, Notre Dame plays an ACC conference schedule for many other sports, so I would think they'll probably get grandfathered in. Maybe the Pac-10 would also grandfather them in for purposes of playing against USC and whatnot. But so if I'm Notre Dame, I'm like, man, we have to be treated ironically enough as a member of the conference for purposes of this season. And then you also have to see, wait, are other people going to follow the Big Ten's lead or not? I haven't been on my phone in an hour, so the way stories go these days on the internet, who knows what's happened in that hour. But I don't think there's a lot of rationale for what the Big Ten has decided to do, and I hope other schools and other conferences don't just blindly follow them.
From Outkick.com, Clay Travis with us on the Midday 180.
ESPN reportedly kind of holding out hope that Kirk Herbstreit can do his Saturday game and would also do Monday Night Football. I love the idea of him in the Monday Night Football booth, but I wonder if you wouldn't be stretching him too thin, because to do a Monday Night Football game, most of the time, those guys are visiting those two teams, one on Saturday and the other in the on Sunday at the home site of the game, and he obviously wouldn't be able to do those things because of his Saturday football obligation. Maybe he would be able to visit the NFL teams earlier in the week to prepare, but preparing for the biggest college football game of the week and then hopefully what would amount to a big NFL game at the same time is a lot to ask, even of one of the best guys in the business. How do you think it would go if he did choose to do both?
So Herbstreit's a buddy of mine, so I don't want to be like, I'm not speaking about having talked about this behind the scenes with him. So this is just my opinion. We haven't actually talked about this at all. I think there are a lot of challenges involved in media schedules this year in general. For instance, College Game Day owes its panache, its pageantry, its pomp and circumstance to being able to be on the road at the biggest college football game of the year. I don't think they're going to take college. This is not coming from anybody. This is my expectation. I haven't talked about this at all. It seems unlikely that they will be taking College Game Day on the road and having a crowded environment behind them with signs and everything else. Again, I don't know that 100%. They haven't announced it. I'm just saying it seems unlikely. I also wonder, Paul, and I don't know the answer to this either, there has been in the past a move towards having people call games remotely. I don't know what the protocol is going to be for NFL games as it pertains to where they're being called, or also whether there are protocols that will exist for college football. In other words, you may have heard more talk about this than I have, but I don't even know what the press box is going to look like. Are there going to be normal press box setups? I don't know if they're going to want the media to have face-to-face interaction with any of the coaches or players either before the game, you know, as part of a normal media interaction, or whether all of that is going to move, you know, electronically via Zoom, where you're not going to be able to get face-to-face with anybody. So I think there are a lot of details to be involved here. To me, ESPN, if they go with Herbstreit, is basically acknowledging, hey, we can't figure out how to fix our Monday Night Football booth. And so we just decided to pull over a guy, and I assume they would put him with Chris Fowler, that we know is already really good at this and already calls the most watched football games on ESPN every year, which is the college football playoff and the college football title game, which drastically typically outrate Monday Night Football. But I think that would be a decision that Herbstreit would have to make. You know, he's wildly successful as a college football analyst and as a part of game day. Given how much different things are going to be this year, is there an opening because the schedule is not as convoluted as it would typically be? Maybe there's less travel for him than there would typically be. Maybe he's going to do College Game Day remotely anyway, and so it's easier for him to do that from the city where he'd be calling Monday Night Football. I don't know the answer. I think there are so many different questions that, so far as I know, have not been resolved about even what the media environment would look like for people like you and me, much less for people at the very apex of the profession in terms of calling games.
Clay Travis has been our guest, joins us each Friday, presented by Ryan Kelly, the Home Loan Expert, homeloanexpert.com. Clay, let us know about Ryan and the great work he's doing.
Look, you're going to save money. I mean, right now, there are a lot of people out of work. There are a lot of people with expenses that they didn't anticipate. And one thing that you have good fortune for, at least, is that mortgage rates are as low as they've ever been. Whether you got a 15-year or a 30-year mortgage, you can go out right now and save an absolute bundle. All it takes is 5 minutes at thehomeloanexpert.com. Put an extra several hundred a week, maybe even a extra several thousand a year in your pocket by making the smart financial decision for you and your family at thehomeloanexpert.com.
Solid discussion there with Clay Travis, Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Paul, a lot to unpack there with, you know, some scenarios. Everything from what does Notre Dame do? One of the ideas I was thinking of last night was, okay, if you have a situation where, you know, they play like, what, a five-game or six-game season with the ACC, that's their agreement, but they also have all of these traditional matchups throughout their calendar for football season too. And if it's a conference-only scenario, and the Big Ten or the Pac-12 doesn't want to have those games, my expectation would be they would want them to have those games. But if they don't have those games this year, if I'm Notre Dame, I'm thinking, why don't I call up the teams that are also being punted from these conference-only schedules and try to pick up a few games that way and for my own football season, so to speak.
But
I don't know if
that's
possible
terrific.
On a short notice, but it's not. I don't think it's like something that they couldn't pull off.
Yeah, it's conceivable. But who are those teams?
Well, I mean, you gave the scenario of like if you have the SEC that's playing a team from either of those big conferences that are choosing not to play anything non-conference.
Okay, so you're saying like a conference that hasn't decided to stay conference only. So if the Pac-12 doesn't do that, but gets thrown off of a Big Ten schedule or thrown off of an ACC schedule, Notre Dame comes and says, hey, Washington, you just lost a date with whomever. We'll play you.
Yeah, Washington, Ohio State, or, you know, Washington,
okay,
Michigan.
So we'll
whatever.
Take the Ohio State game.
Right, yeah. Like, yeah. Do you want to play that week? Like, again, I don't know if it all matches up, and it would take and require a lot of other planning involved.
It might not be that complicated. It might just be, hey, you had Ohio State. Ohio State's out. We'll take it.
Yeah, and we're open
and
that
if it
week.
Was at your place, we'll take it at your place. And if it was at their place, we'll take it at our place. Or if you'd rather it be at your place, we'll come to your place.
I think that's one way to salvage it and also keep your picture available for, you know, a college football playoff scenario. Again,
yeah, also
like,
that's a good game.
That's,
you know,
me.
You're not picking up, lousy games.
I'm just looking at it from the 30,000-foot view without diving into the schedules and trying to piece it together. I'll save that for someone else. But just thinking about how you could do it with an independent school. There's one example of how they could finish their and complete a season that could be filled with some empty holes if they're not allowed to be a part of a conference schedule.
I do think this going all conference, on the one hand, it provides kind of a solidarity and a we're all in this together and we're going to take the same amount of risk as our brethren, and go to the same places and not go to the same places as our as the people that we're closest with. I kind of get that. But also what Clay was saying, and what we said earlier about the geography of it, and even the SEC doesn't fit this anymore. I mean, Kentucky to Texas A&M, Missouri to Florida is not a tightly compacted league anymore.
Yeah, but it's not New York and Florida for the ACC.
Yeah, it's not Boston and Florida, and it's not Nebraska and Rutgers. But it's still not great. No conference is anymore, and that's a fact of the matter. So to me, the Big Ten and the ACC are kind in doing that. Like the Ivy League is a compact league. I know people don't necessarily like to hear the comparison, and it's not big time college football, obviously. But what they're doing is kind of old school. These other conferences, to me, are pretending like they're like the Ivy League and that there is some geographical compactness in what they're doing, and there isn't. So they're pretending like this is old time, right, where the Big Ten was more compact and hadn't expanded to Rutgers and Nebraska, or the SEC hadn't expanded to Missouri and Texas A&M, and that the – you know, that these conferences hadn't expanded beyond their original footprint that really did define an area of the United States.
Yeah, and that's changed drastically, and you could argue for the worse, right? But the big thing that they're gaining by doing conference only is flexibility with their schedule. The intention would be to have 10 games that you could fit within a 15-week time frame. So if you have a scenario where you can't play that week, instead of forfeiting, you're able to adjust that game to fit.
You bought yourself some space.
Yeah, and a few weeks for that, if you can get the schedule in, right? Like, that's the benefit. You don't just have to punt on the game and move on to the next week. You've built in some open weeks that you otherwise wouldn't have if you played the full schedule. That's the benefit of, regardless of region, that's the benefit of doing the conference-only schedule, at least planning for it now in July.
Yeah, but I think I get what you're saying, but odds are if you need time, you're going to need 2 weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to need 2 weeks. So it's not going to be just you're going to have to push 2 weeks. And so have you bought yourself 2 weeks? You probably have bought yourself 2 weeks once. Have you bought yourself 2 weeks twice? Probably not.
But if you have to buy yourself that much time, chances are college football is not being played in the fall.
Yeah.
Right.
Or your program isn't.
Right. Exactly. 615-737-1045, our number. Did you read the Julian Edelman letter, the open letter that he wrote? Or the post that he put out.
I read about it. He put a video out, I think, and then
video. Yeah, and then he reached out.
Very good.
He and DeSean Jackson spoke last night. That's the way to handle a discussion, right? Like, instead of the cancel culture that we're in, where you go all in on something instead of having some open dialogue. I was impressed with the way he handled it, and impressed with the ability to reach out and chat with a fellow NFL player and talk about it instead of just hashing it out in social media or responding to every comment that's made.
I agree with you about the cancel culture, but I do think, and I'd be surprised if most, well, I'll speak for myself here. what DeSean Jackson had to say was clearly anti-Semitic, and he didn't get jumped on for it. Certainly I didn't get jumped on for it to the degree that the NFL players have jumped on people who have said racist things.
Right.
And so I think it's fair, if you're examining it from 30,000 feet, to say, hey, everybody, or not everybody, but there's been a large scale movement here. I have to speak carefully. There's been a large scale movement here for people to join in and really pay attention in a new way to what your suffering has been, as you have, and we've listened to you and we've joined in on the plight of Black Americans that has lasted far too long, and that's been a huge issue, and we've been quicker than we've ever been before to have our antenna up, to hear the kind of things and to observe the kind of things that you've said you've endured. And we want to be sympathetic and helpful on that. And now we see one of your fraternity say something anti-Semitic, and you guys are all taking a pass on calling them out. So if you're as universally against the kind of thing that you're talking about, and I fully believe you are, I don't understand why you've been so reluctant to hit the keyboard on him and give him what seems like has been a free pass. Now, Julian Edelman made a very nice approach, but guess what Julian Edelman is? He's Jewish. Glenn Schwartz, is it? He came out and said something, but guess what Glenn Schwartz is? He's Jewish. So where are the non-Jewish NFL players saying, hey, you're doing exactly the same kind of thing, DeSean Jackson, that we've been complaining is happening to us as black guys, and you're doing it to Jewish people, and it's all falls into the same basket, and we can't accept it. And these guys have not stepped forward and said that, and it disappoints me that we haven't seen the same kind of reaction to it. And I don't know if they're... If there's a fear of tiptoeing into those waters where they're less familiar with what's been, you know, they have the black experience, so they feel confident responding to somebody speaking about the black experience or speaking racism. But when they see anti-Semitism, they don't know what to say. But I sure feel like, given the context of everything that's going on, I'm surprised that there hasn't been more said from an NFL perspective on this, right?
Well, and I think from Edelman's stance, Edelman said, okay, before I respond, I want to talk to him and see where he's coming from. Like, what made him post that, right? And that opens the dialogue. And then Edelman gave his point of view on it to DeSean Jackson. And then Edelman tweets out, or wrote, DeSean and I spoke for a while last night. We're making plans to use our experiences to educate one another and grow together. Stay tuned. I mean, that is the way to have a dialogue and discussion instead
of an
argument on social
media. He's going to take DeSean to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, and DeSean's going to take him to the Black History Museum. That's right. Perfect.
Agreed.
But, I mean, for how quick, look at what happened to Drew Brees.
I know.
I mean, Drew Brees got lit up for something that was not, if you're comparing, on the same level as what DeSean Jackson had to say. And it seems like this is not level treatment for stuff that isn't on corresponding levels. And I'd be curious to hear from black NFL players why they didn't feel the need to speak
on
Twitter to DeSean Jackson when they felt the need to speak to so many people on Twitter about black issues.
But I think it's a good reaction overall. If we're all against the cancel culture, right, the way this was handled is, to me, the right way to respond. So
I agree, but if there was
instead of comparing it to what others did previously.
Right, but if there was another racist issue right now, we think the response would be this measured response only from two guys?
Oh, it would dominate the storylines and headlines. It would.
And this hasn't.
That's right. We'll have some other headlines coming up. David Reed is about to give you that live update that we always say is the best in the business. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.